אתם עם SBS בעברית. לעוד סיפורים מעניינים, כנסו ל-sbs.com.au.
Idan Dershowitz joined the Australian Center for Jewish Civilization at Monash University in 2024, and he is here to talk to us today about a very fascinating subject, the history of homosexuality in the Bible. Welcome, Idan, to SBS Hebrew.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, this isn't a subject that we venture into very commonly because it is so specific and it is so interesting. And I just wanted to get an overview of homosexuality in the Bible. Were there references? Was it prevalent? Can you give us some sort of context on this subject?
Sure, thanks. So homosexuality comes up in the Bible, although it's not homosexuality per se as a sexual identity, but behaviors, especially sexual behaviors between men, that comes up in the Bible. And one of the texts that's quoted most often in a negative context as, you know, proof that that homosexuality is something that is perverse, according to certain people's views, is two passages from Leviticus. So people quote Leviticus 18, for example, where it says that homosexual relations between men are an abomination. So that's usually the beginning and end of it, what anyone really thinks about the biblical position, you know, especially the Hebrew Bible or Old Testament, that, you know, that it's something that's perceived by the authors of the Bible as something that's really perverse. But the actual story of a biblical attitude towards homosexual relations is much, much more complex and interesting. So first of all, it comes up in various places in the Bible. There are stories, not necessarily laws, that give us some clues regarding attitudes. In my own research, I've made the case that Leviticus 18, this passage that presents homosexual relations as an abomination, actually underwent some serious evolution and rewriting, so that although in its current form it definitely does make that statement, in an earlier edition it might have reflected very different attitudes and not attitudes that were not negative in that regard.
Well, the part that I'm looking at calls it an abomination. Do you think this is the stigma people take dating back all the way to the Bible? Do you think this tampers with the way they perceive homosexuality?
Absolutely. So certainly in religious communities that consider the Bible to be the Word of God, so in many Christian communities and Jewish communities, these passages have a lot of weight. I think that it's also had an impact in broader society, so even people who don't necessarily subscribe to, you know, the idea that the Bible is the Word of God, the attitudes that were influenced by these passages might have an impact on these people, even in secular society. But what I think we can see in the, if we take a careful look at the text of Leviticus 18, the same chapter seems to reflect the opposite idea, or at least could have been interpreted that way and seems to have been understood in antiquity, even in the time of the Bible's writing and editing. It seems to have been understood as reflecting the opposite attitude. In other words, one that does not see a particular problem with sexual relations between men. And I'd be happy to explain why I think that. So the same chapter, Leviticus 18, has a series of laws that are seemingly relatively unrelated to the issue of homosexual relations. It's a series of incestuous pairings. So it says it's basically that incestuous relations of various specific incestuous relations are problematic. The way it's phrased, though, is highly idiomatic and technical. So it doesn't just say, you know, don't commit incest. It says things like the nakedness of the sister of your father you shall not uncover. She is your father's flesh.
Can I just stop you in your tracks just for one moment, Idan? why are we comparing incest to homosexuality? Or is this just the broader context before we zoom into homosexuality?
It's a great question. The reason that I'm mentioning it is because it appears in the very same chapter. Leviticus 18 is mostly concerned with incestuous pairings. So in the same chapter that it says that you shall not lie with a man as one lies with a woman, it is an abomination. It has many, many laws saying you shall not uncover the nakedness of a specific family member.
So the taboo is on par with incest.
Potentially, but here's where it gets interesting. This list of incestuous pairings, they're all phrased in the same way. They all begin by saying the nakedness of so-and-so you shall not uncover. Each one ends with some sort of explanation or a few additional words. So it also says the nakedness of the wife of your brother you shall not uncover, and things like that, okay?
Yep.
But what I noticed once when I was reading this is that there's something really peculiar, which is that there are two places where it seems to be saying something when you start reading the law, and then it has this sort of clarification that seems to be really trying to convince you that you misunderstood the first part. So I'll explain what I mean. So we've determined that uncovering the nakedness of a person is some sort of euphemism for sexual relations. So when it says the nakedness of the wife of your brother, you shall not uncover, it means don't have sexual relations with this woman. But then there are two places where it says that you shall not uncover the nakedness of a particular person who's not a woman. For example, it says in the very beginning of this set of laws, the nakedness of your father and the nakedness of your mother you shall not. And this sounds like it's prohibiting incestuous relations between a man, because the target of this law is a man, and either of his parents, either his father or his mother. But then the continuation of the same verse is, she is your mother. You shall not uncover her nakedness. So the first half of the verse sounds like it's prohibiting relations with either of your parents. And the second half sounds like it's, the truth is that outside, in my opinion, outside of Leviticus 18 and Leviticus 20, the Hebrew Bible has nothing negative to say about homosexual relations. And then in the New Testament, we see a similar sort of variety. So the story of Sodom and Gomorrah is mentioned in the New Testament in Jude, and some people read into that a criticism of homosexual relations, but that very well may not be the meaning in Jude either. So, but rather it might have been something, this idea that the that there were relations between angels and people or something like that, that was the problem. And so I think that both of these corpora, both the Old Testament or Hebrew Bible, as Jews call it, and the New Testament, reflect all sorts of different ideas that were circulating. And some people's ideas were critical or very negative towards the homosexual relations, and others were not. It is not the case that the Bible has a clear negative attitude. And this is true of the Bible in general. People often treat the Bible as monolithic, as representing a single idea. And more often than not, the Bible is actually really complex and records all sorts of differing ideas. People who might have disagreed really strongly with one another, their words are all embedded in the text of the Bible, which is what makes it really, really interesting and rich and deep and three-dimensional.
You think of comparative literature and then you think of comparative Bible studies. It's quite interesting. Idan, I should have probably have opened with this question, but I'm just quite curious to know what drew you to examining the Bible, and especially with this subject, examining the history of homosexuality.
I grew up in a traditional Jewish household, and I read the Bible from a very young age, and I was always very interested in the text of the Bible. But as a child and as a young adult, I felt like the answers that I was finding to the questions, or the answers I was receiving from teachers and so on, to the questions that I had about the text were often somewhat unsatisfying. And I spent a few years studying in a yeshiva, so it's a sort of place of higher learning of Jewish texts after high school. And there, of all places, I encountered academic books on the Bible, books whose premise wasn't that the text is the word of God and you just need to ask your religious leader what it means so that you can do it, but also, trying to understand what the text could have meant in antiquity, how the text might have evolved, and things like that. And I found some of the answers in those sorts of books and the approach extremely appealing. And I just started reading more and thinking more along those lines, and I became really excited about the opportunities that sort of approach.
Can I ask you something perhaps a little bit unorthodox? In a yeshiva, would they discuss the subject of homosexuality, or is that antithetical to studying Jewish religious studies in a yeshiva?
So there are different sorts of yeshivas, but generally speaking, in a yeshiva, it would come up if only in to present the normative position, which, although there might be some changes in recent years in certain circles, even on the more conservative parts of the Orthodox world, in yeshiva, talk about what these texts say and what that means, what exactly is prohibited, maybe why it's prohibited, things like that. But people wouldn't engage in a sort of in an attempt to reconstruct earlier layers of the text, like what I've been discussing with you. So it was somewhat ironic that it was at yeshiva that I had these ideas, but it's a little bit more complicated than that, because there are, specifically at the yeshiva where I studied, there were scholars who had introduced certain ideas from the world of Bible studies, the academic world, and tried to translate them into religious language, and that opened the door to some of these ideas being discussed and presented. It's interesting and complicated, but that was my personal story.
Fascinating stuff. Idan Dershowitz, thank you so much for joining us on SBS Hebrew.
Thank you.
רוצים לשמוע עוד סיפורים? האזינו דרך האפל פודקאסט, גוגל פודקאסט, ספוטיפיי, או בכל מקום אחר בו ניתן להאזין לפודקאסטים.